Welcome to Smart in the City, the Babble podcast where we bring together top actors in the smart city arena, sparking dialogues and interactions around the stakeholders and themes most prevalent for today's citizens and tomorrow's generations. I am your host, Tamlin Shimizu, and I hope you will enjoy this episode and gain knowledge and connections to accelerate the change for a better urban life. Smart in the City is brought to you by Babble Smart Cities. We enable processes from research and strategy development to co-creation and implementation. To learn more about us, please visit the Babble platform at babble-smartcities.eu. Welcome back to another episode of Smart in the City, everyone. This is a special episode hosted by one of my colleagues, this time hosted by our CEO and founder, Alexander Schmidt. I hope you enjoy the change in voice and pace, and I will catch you next time.
So lovely to hear you all again. We are sitting here in Rotterdam for this edition of the Urban Future Conference for the one in 2024. We are glad to be back, like every year. Thanks to our partners from Urban Future for allowing us to use the rooms here again and for this great partnership. I'm thrilled to dig into what's happening in Paris today with maybe the best person to talk about public space, revegetation, greening, the city. So many things happening in Paris. I'm really, really happy to have Christoph Nadowski here with me, the Deputy Mayor of Revegetation, Green Spaces, Biodiversity and Animal Welfare at the City of Paris. Welcome, and I'm really glad to have you.
Thank you.
So you're the first Parisian mayor in charge of animal welfare, and you aim to bring back nature in public spaces of the city. Your roadmap includes actions such as planting more than 17,000 trees, transforming Paris into a garden city, and revitalizing the vegetation in public space. So this experience, you also were, before I just read this, you were the president of the European Cyclists Federation, and you do actually lots of things by bike.
During 3 years, based on Brussels, we tried to push forward to have more cyclists on the roads in Europe.
I saw you giving interviews on cycles, and so you are a passionate cyclist yourself.
Yes, I am, and I continue also to be interested in that topic, and we try to do our best also in Paris to have more and more people on bikes.
Okay, very good. We'll certainly dig into these topics more over the next half an hour. Very much looking forward to it. We always start with a small question, a small teaser question, particularly in your field, those beautiful public spaces in Paris. If those public spaces, the parks, the green spaces could talk, what stories do you think they would tell us?
You know the movie when Terminator says, "I'll be back."
Oh yes, so maybe, iconic line.
So maybe the green spaces and the parks would tell us we are back, because we are at the core of the city, of the core of the quality of life and the well-being of the citizens. So trust us and give us more space in our cities.
Yeah, that is a lovely note. That's a lovely note. I still will hear it always with this Austrian accent, though, not with a Parisian one. Okay, very, very, very lovely. Maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about your role. What's your day-to-day look like? What are you currently working on beyond these big numbers, 17,000 trees, these activities? They all sound amazing. But what does your day look like?
Well, my job is to green the city. It's also my function. And my job is to give well-being, and especially after what we lived with the pandemic. When we were confined, we needed to have space. And the first questions that asked people when the after the pandemic was, we need more access to nature. We need more spaces, green spaces, open spaces, especially for the people who in urban cities don't have access to the nature and can't go to a vacation because they don't have enough money or they don't have a second home. So the need for the majority of the people of having access to nature is a key challenge for the cities today. And then in 2022, we had several heat waves in Europe and floods also. So we are facing also the consequences of the climate change. We are living the consequences already right now. So we need to act. We need to take decisions and to implement policies as fast as we can. And that is also a part of my job.
Brilliant. For those of our listeners to hear this for the first time, the reference to a flood. My train was delayed by 7 hours because of a flood in southern Germany. So that reference is very, very recent. It's very much on top of the head. In Paris, you're undertaking significant efforts to kind of do these redistribution, creating more green spaces. Now you are born in Paris. How has that kind of changed over your lifetime as well? And how are you planning to change this over the next years as well?
Well, we have the chance also to have a mayor. Her name is Anne Hidalgo, and she's an incredible woman with a strong political will. She gives us also the opportunity to reshape the city, because she understands a simple thing is that our cities won't be like they were in the past century. We are facing new challenges, and we must adapt also to the climate change. Reshaping and redistributing, the public space to the people and to the citizens is also a matter of health, of well-being, a conviction that we have that it is necessary to do it today. So that is the reason why we are giving more space to people. And as we are today in the Netherlands, it reminds me a sentence that I heard a few years ago here in the Netherlands in a conference called the Velocity in Groningen. The sentence was pronounced by a guy whose name is cycling professor. He is also an activist, but also a scientist, a professor. And he was asking the audience, what makes the children more happy, and why the Dutch children are the happiest children in the world. And he said this is because they can cycle, they have a cycle pass, and they can go to meet their friends, not asking their parents. So they have the autonomy. That sentence was very, very strong, and I still have it in mind, because when you give also space to people, and especially to children, it's also giving them the autonomy, and it's a kind of also emancipation you can provide them. And that's what we are seeing today when we are implementing school streets, when we are pedestrianizing these streets who are near the schools. We provide good conditions to the children to go to their schools from their home safely by walking or by cycling. When we are implementing new cycle paths in Paris, we are now linking more and more people, parents with children, biking. So it is also part of the autonomy that we give to the people. And this is why it reminds me this sentence of the children who were happy. So that is the reason why in Paris we are taking space given formally to the cars, and we are redistributing it to all the people, not just to the children and the parents, but also, for example, for the elderly persons. Because when you are pedestrianizing the street, when you are putting benches, they can sit, they can have a rest also for the elderly persons. So it's a global view, and redistributing. I have it's difficult to say to me that. I'm sorry, redistributing space to all the people. So that is the vision that we have, and we're trying to develop it day by day.
And I love that. And you're really giving to people instead of taking things away, right? So you're giving them new opportunities and safer spaces. But still, in these transitions, there are transitions. So there's change, right? So there are people that might not be happy with these changes. You read about, you know, closing down roads. Everyone that drives a car will be unhappy, or lots of them will be unhappy. So how do you handle these tensions? How do you work with these people to, you know, still move forward in a good way?
Well, when you have changes, you always have resistances. If you don't change nothing will happen. But that doesn't mean that people are happy and that they agree the status quo. When we are changing things, it's not coming from nowhere, because I am a politician. I was elected. So I was elected on a program. I was candidate. And during the campaign, we say what we are going to do. And then when we are elected, we do what we said normally. A promise must be normally implemented. And when you take a promise, you must also put it in the reality after that. And that's what we did with several decisions that we took. For example, if I take the example of the pedestrianization of the right bank of the River Seine in 2016, it was in our program. And then we were elected. We prepared a vote in the city council, and the decision was voted by the city council. And then there was a public survey, and it agreed the decision. But after that, we were hearing the opponents, and just the opponents, but not the silent majority who voted for that. And during 2 years, because our opponents went to the court, we were just hearing them saying it was bringing more pollution, more congestion, despite the fact that the space was already pedestrianized and that there were thousands and thousands of people enjoying it. You can see now how it is.
Me, one of them, right? I was at really? That time. Since yeah. I was twice there since 2016. Oh. I enjoy this space so much. And I have my daughter. Last time we were there, I think my daughter must have been less than 2 years old, and having her run there in the sand and thing like freely in between the people was an amazing feeling.
Yes. So you can see every day people are walking, cycling, people are commuting from their home to go to work. People are jogging and running. It's a hot spot today for runners to run along the river. We really have reconnected the city to the river. But after that, there were still the opponents contesting. After 2 years, the court gave us reason, and we won at the court finally. Mm. And during that time, the support for the measure has increased. And today, if you ask people, no one wants to come back. Mm. So you need to be strong on your position when you take this kind of decision, to believe in what you are doing as well. Of course, you can sometimes do some mistakes. We are not perfect people. But when you have convictions, you have to be strong, and then to go through your idea.
Was it nevertheless frustrating maybe for you to kind of go through these 2 years, basically having to wait or delay your measures?
Yes, it's always frustrating because you have passed all the legal measures, and you still have you still wait the decision of the court until the end. You don't know what will really happen. So yes, it can be a little bit frustrating, but at last it was a kind of liberation with the decision of the court.
That's great to hear. Now, these changes into green spaces, just very, very practically, what do they change in the way? So we know how we maintain roads, right? So roads must be refreshed every once in a while with new concrete. But how is it with, you know, green spaces or all these kinds? What challenges are there to keep them clean, healthy, green, whatever they are. This is a task, I would assume.
Yeah, yes, today our cities, and I think it all over Europe, we are facing the same situation, is that we need to cope with the consequences of climate change. And we know wherever we are that we will have more heat waves, more floods, more extreme climate consequences of the climate change. To cope with that, we have several measures that we can take. And one of them is greening massively our cities. So, and we are in a race against time. We need to go fast because the consequences are also already there. And for that, we try to invest massively in depaving, remove concrete, put wide streets up of open ground, planting trees also all over the streets, to face also the situation and to adapt our cities. And there is also a need from the people to have near their home the possibility to have an access to nature. It brings a lot of benefits, and we know that there is a benefits of reducing the heat islands, the benefits of for our well-being and for our mental health of accessing to nature. So for all these reasons, economical, social, environmental, the benefits are higher than the costs. Of course, that costs. But first, we look at the benefits for the people, and each street which is pedestrianized, in which we are planting trees, in which we are putting benches, we see the neighborhood happy. And we don't have any person saying we want to be we want to go back to the situation we had before. So it is a very popular measure, and that is the reason why, of course, we continue in that way.
And that is great to hear. Also, the learning that once it's implemented, people tend to be happy with it.
Yes, you always hear the people who do not agree during the consultation, but often we have the silent majority who supports, and then after that I really think that there is a strong majority who is satisfied by the decision.
But you did mention an interesting point, which is often a barrier when it comes to these transitions, which is the money part, the budget mm-hmm. part for it. How would you, if you had to explain a bit the costs behind this transition, greening an area, redistributing road space back to the people, what kind of budgets are we talking about for this, and does it pay off? So I totally agree with you. The social value there is, it helps with climate mitigation 100%. But is it as a monetary investment? Is it something?
It is a monetary investment, but it is also the task and the role of local public authority to do that. When a municipality decides to open a new garden or to invest in reshaping streets, it's also the decision taken by the citizens. It can cost for us, for example, greening the city is approximately 20% of our investment budget of the city. Yes.
Wow.
That's an important budget. It's about 300 million euros for the whole mandate of 6 years that we have.
So 50 million euro a year.
Yes. And the global budget for the investment for the whole mandate and for the all the policies is about 1.5 billion euros. So you have that 20%. So that's, yes, that's a priority of this mandate. And it is also a need, I think, for the city.
Okay. And this is for the setup period, right? So for the first 6 years to, and that finances the whole vision, the 17,000 trees, doing that for the whole city.
Yes. Okay. It's an investment also for the future because, as I said, the consequences of the climate change, we see that, they are coming very fast. And, we need to keep our cities livable and desirable, and especially for those people who don't have a great income and a lot of money. When there are heat waves during the summer, they can go outside the city. So we must give a response near their home, near where they are living. Having new gardens, fresh areas, that means that we must depave, plant trees, and try to offer a service. It's also a public equipment that we are also providing by this investment. It's not just putting trees, but because it's beautiful. Okay, we like to see trees. We like to hear also the birds. But it's also a question and a matter of health for the people.
And that's a very impressive commitment to that with 20% of the overall investment budget. Now there is one more great thing happening in Paris in not such a long time to wait anymore. The Olympic Games are being played there. So what is it that, you know, that I would assume impacts what your plans are rather significantly? So how is your job and the activities you are doing, the green spaces that are being developed, how is that integrated in all the work and all the activities and buildings, infrastructure developments around the Olympics?
First of all, we see the Olympic Games as an accelerator of the ecological transition. And we try not to make the mistakes that were made by the past. That is the reason why, for example, 95% of the infrastructure is already present. When we are making some infrastructures for the Olympic Games, for example, we build a new swimming pool, Olympic swimming pool, one arena for some games like basketball, for example, or the Olympic Village. After the Olympic Games, this infrastructure will be a legacy for the people because there will be local equipments, sport equipments, or the Olympic Village will be also a new new sector, a new quarter, a new district with housing for students, and also with green spaces. So we are also reshaping the city and providing new equipments and new services to the people. And we look at the Olympic Games also as a legacy for the future, not just for the 2 or 3 weeks of the Games, but after that, for many years, for the people who will also enjoy, I hope so, the new infrastructure that will be built for that time.
Okay, that's very interesting to see. So that basically it's part of the overall city planning, and it will be used for the games for a few weeks.
Exactly. We do not want, for example, to make the same mistake that it was made, for example, 20 years ago in Athens in 2004, when there were some equipments that were built just for the games and then left abandoned. Mm-hmm. It was a huge money spent for nothing. So now we learned from the past that we need now to be more sober. That is the reason why we have already all the infrastructure, 95%, and then just the three new infrastructure that we need, they will be after the games for the people.
Okay. Okay. Wow. That is good to hear, because that's something that you often hear, that why the public also revolts against these kinds of projects, because they are seen as elitary, just helping a few and then not being, helping the general society in a way. So that's one way how you've done it, and it sounds like that does a lot of the job already. How in general is it that you engage with the public? So with around the Olympics, when it comes to deciding these things that you just mentioned, but also maybe in your normal work, right? Because, you know, square meters are heavily fought over, every square meter is heavily fought over in a city. So how do you engage with cities? How do you work with conflicts, maybe particularly around the Olympics, but also in your daily work?
Yeah, yes, I think that the organizers of the Olympic Games are aware today that the acceptability of the Olympic Games could drastically decrease if they are not respecting some principles. And the principle of sobriety, of legacy, of equity are very strong today. But we see that some activists also are saying that the Olympic Games are just for a few persons, and that the price, for example, of the tickets to go to some events are very, very high, which is really true. So they should be aware that the acceptability of the Olympic Games are questioned today. And that we need to make them as sober as we can, respecting also and reducing as much as possible the carbon footprint of the whole organization of the games, meaning how people are moving, how they are eating, how the they can also access to the different events. We are aware that today we need also to organize the Olympic Games with the respect of some basic principles, and respecting the nature, respecting also the people. And I think that for Paris, these principles were globally respected.
Okay, and those principles are omniscient. So people see them, everyone knows about those three principles, or is this something that you can communicate to us and our listeners now very well? But if we ask anyone else in Paris, so those three, if you can repeat them again, you...
There's what I said already?
Yeah.
So being sober... Yeah, respecting the people.
And with sobriety, with soberness, you mean like being...
Yes, so today we must respect some principle if we want that the Olympic Games are accepted by the majority of the people. We need to have sober games. We need to have games that respect people's rights, and especially... the price of the tickets, or for example the rights of the workers who worked to build the infrastructure, and then the third is the legacy. So we need to have infrastructures that are built not just for the Olympic Games but for the people, and that is the reason why the Olympic swimming pool, the new arena that is built, and the Olympic Village will be profitable to people after the Olympic Games, for the students and for the local residents.
And that's something great. And I think that's something that other cities can and should learn from you, from your daily work. So now also outside of the Olympics, what kind of guidance, what kind of, what would you throw to other cities? People maybe in similar positions than you, but in other, maybe smaller cities, not maybe as far as you. What would you give them as a bit of a guidance to say, hey, this is how you get this started, or what would you throw them?
We always have to learn about the others. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we believe in some things in Paris, and we can inspire other cities, but we are also inspired by other cities. For example, today at Urban Future here in Rotterdam, I heard about what Barcelona did this last year about the super blocks. I don't know if you are, if you heard about this project formerly, but it's very inspiring. And what Barcelona did with this reshaping of some streets, giving more space to people, also putting more vegetation and planting trees, putting also playgrounds in the middle of the streets for children, was very inspiring also for us. And what we are doing today in Paris was inspired by Barcelona. So this is an example of what we can learn from other cities, and we have a lot to learn about each other's.
That's a great note. I'm lucky enough to our office in Stuttgart is actually just 20 meters away from the first super block in Stuttgart.
So great.
I love the concept too. Great. Moving on, is there anything more that you would like to share as part of the podcast? Something that we didn't touch so far.
I would say that we are facing maybe some strange moments sometimes, and we live maybe also we are living uncertain times, and sometimes we can not be sure about what we are doing. But I would say that when you are convicted of trying to do things for the well-being of people and for citizens, then you have to just to go through your idea and to go to the end of what you promised to people. So what I see is that the changes we have made in Paris since 10 years are quite important. I see that some people are not very happy of that, maybe in Paris, because we have a lot of works, so a lot of constraints in the daily life of the people. But after that, when it's finished, we see a huge and a large majority of people who are happy of that. So I think that if I can have a message also for the other decision makers, is to believe in what you are thinking and doing. Of course, nobody's perfect, and sometimes you do some mistakes and you have to change some things of what you are doing. But I think that globally, and what I hear from the people who are not living in Paris, but coming to Paris sometimes, they are telling us that the changes that we made are going in the good direction, in the right direction, that these are significant changes of reshaping the public space, redefining the space between people, giving more space to people and to nature. And this is quite also satisfying for us to have also this vision of people who are outside of the city, and it gives us also the force and the strength to continue.
That's a very good note. That brings us almost to the end of the time we have together, but there is one segment which I just find fits perfectly into the work that you are doing, and it's called the hot take of the day.
Hot take of the day. We want to hear an opinion of yours that may be slightly controversial or debated.
Yes, and I chose the question of the price of the parking of the SUVs, are not just only the SUVs, but of the heavy vehicles. We brought a few weeks ago a decision at the local assembly of increasing significantly the price of the parking for those heavy vehicles. And we asked the people for that. So we made a referendum and we had 78,000 Parisians who came to vote. It's also, I would say, a significant number of voters, and 55% of them approved the fact that will increase by three the price of the parking for those vehicles.
Times three, so you
times three.
Wow.
Yes. So it's a heavy decision, I would say, like the vehicle. The Parisians said okay. And why did they say okay? In majority. Because there is a problem, and it's also a signal that we want to address to the car companies, is because our cars are getting bigger and bigger and heavier and heavier since 20 years. And in the streets of the cities, that can't match with safety of the people, with the place taken by those vehicles in the streets. They are sometimes they are parked on half of the sidewalk because they don't have enough space, because they are more than 2 meter wide. So in narrow space, when you don't have space, we need to have smaller cars and not bigger cars. So we had that that idea to ask the people, not to take a top down decision. We could just take the decision ourselves without going to ask the Parisians, but we wanted to do that, and as there is a clear majority for that, by the 1st of October, this new tarification and new price for the heavy vehicles will take place in the streets of Paris.
Oh wow, that's another major step. Thank you for sharing this, and certainly something that we will read in the news once it's implemented.
Yes, and I hope that it will be also a signal for the car companies to have cars adapted to the cities and. Okay, we will see. Maybe they will understand the signal. I hope so.
Brilliant. That brings me to my last question for today, and the question we ask all of our guests. So for you, what is a smart city?
A smart city is a city that gives well-being for all the people in an inclusive way. It's not just about technology. Technology can, of course, be useful. I would say that the innovation is not also about technology. We can have also social innovation. So a smart city for me is a city who gives the opportunity for all the inhabitants of a city to live well. And not just on a technology basis.
That's a very great answer. I love that a lot. Christoph, thank you so much.
Thank you very
much. For coming to the show. And thanks again to Urban Future for making this possible here in Rotterdam. And to all of our listeners, don't forget, you can always create a free account on babel-smartcities.eu. Find out more about smart city projects, solutions, and implementations. Thank you all very much and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. I'll see you at the next stop on the journey to a better urban life.